Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, and I'm a group director at InfoTrends. And I'm delighted that you could join us for our webinar today titled Trendsetting Digital Packaging 2011. Today I'm joined by a group of people that are, I think, experts in the field that will share with you where they see the market headed relative to packaging. First of all, I've got Tom Egan, Vice President of Industry Services at PMMI, George Epen, who's the Packaging Center of Excellence Marketing Manager at Frito-Lay in North America, and Glenn Marino, who's the Vice President of Packaging Solutions at Tucker. It's a consolidated graphics company. Before we get started, what I would like to do is give you just a few tips to make sure that you can enjoy the webinar effectively. First of all, if you are having any technical difficulties, let us know by using the Ask a Question box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the Help button below. Make sure that you've disabled those pop-up blockers. You can get a PDF version of this presentation by clicking on the Download Slides button. If you like what you're seeing and you're hearing today, you can tell your peers by using the Invite a Colleague button, or you can let us know by clicking the Survey button and sending your feedback. I'll be taking questions throughout the course of the webinar, as will our panelists. So all you need to do is use that Q&A button and use the Ask a Question box, and we'll be responding to those questions as they're being asked. And finally, you can view this event on demand for the next 90 days. From the perspective of the topics we'll be covering, I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes sharing with you some of the dynamics that we see taking place in the packaging market. And then I'm going to turn it over to our panelists. You'll hear from Tom Egan. He's going to talk about building stronger brands with processing and packaging innovation. Jared Epen is going to talk about furthering brand equity with meaningful packaging and technology. And finally, Glenn's going to share with you a little different perspective on the package, and that's how they're effectively using it for dimensional mail. With that as a backdrop, I think what we all need to think about is what the meaning of a package is. And in fact, it truly is the essence of the brand. And we see colors and product labels, that's how we depict the brand. And when I tell folks that, not only is the essence of the brand, but it's even more. It's really a protective container for whatever product it holds. It's a dispensing mechanism in some instances. It's a tracking and a tracing tool, a security agent. It can be used to inform and educate. It's an interactive marketing tool, and you'll hear some great stories about that today. Plus, for those of you that are in the printing industry, it's a tremendous opportunity for business growth. When we take a look at the world of packaging, I will tell you that it's a big and a very diverse market, and our panelists will reinforce that. The good news about packaging is that packaging grows with the human population and with economic development. It's not going to be displaced by an electronic document. There's a heavy emphasis on small format and brand image, and that makes full-color digital a good option for short runs. We're finding that color digital technologies are becoming a very, very important print methodology, and we're also seeing that packaging is, in fact, a driver of multi-channel communications. When we look at the critical drivers, first of all, what we're finding is that there's increased focus by U.S. companies on manufacturing and packaging cost reduction as well as productivity. We're seeing that there's a requirement for increased flexibility to handle a widening range of packaging requirements. There are shorter runs, there's new packaging styles and configurations, and a requirement to support increases in SKUs. Clearly, the environment is important. We're seeing a lot of focus on sustainability and biodegradability. We're seeing an importance in security and tracking and how that links to the package. The other thing we're finding is as advertising budgets were cut, packaging solutions are being asked to do more. They're really becoming a much more important component in the advertising space as well as a competitive differentiator. We're seeing greater demand stemming from growth of convenience packaging. And finally, we're seeing intelligence embedded with the package. All of those reasons cause us to see growth in the world of digital color packaging. And what you're seeing is that it's a double-digit growth opportunity for the printing and publishing market. Now, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Tom Egan, and Tom's going to share with you, at a broad industry perspective, a lot of the critical trends that we're seeing. And with that, Tom, take it away.
Thanks very much, Barb. Tom Egan with PMMI, and happy to be joining everyone today. Some of you may know PMMI. We'll just go briefly over it. We're a North American packaging and processing supply chain, about 580 members, all of which are company members. We have quite a number of them going back almost 70 years. Some of you may know us by our trade shows, the PAC Expo show, which is held in the even years in Chicago, and in the odd years, and so 2011 at PAC Expo Las Vegas at the end of September. We look to help the attendees and all of the end users who are customers of our members strengthen their brands, improve the cost, and certainly achieve the sustainability goals, and that'll be something we'll be talking about in just a couple minutes. So one of the elements that we're very pleased to announce to the audience today, it just came out as a press release last week, is that PMMI is forming an alliance for innovation and operational excellence. It is, in essence, an ability to form a set of groups for end users, for all of those throughout the supply chain to work with subject matter experts on topics of common concern. For example, one of the groups that's been formed already is related to operational reliability, and so we have a number of end users who are working in packaging and processing operations coming out and saying one issue that we have has to do with measurement of the performance of our line. Then PMMI brings some subject matter experts together, and the net result will be pushing a white paper or a webinar to the whole of the industry so that everyone can benefit. So a group of interested end users, some subject matter experts from the solution set, and then bringing forth an element, whether it be a white paper, a conference, or again, a webinar that the whole of the industry can then use and benefit from. We're excited about it. It's picking up from something that the Grocery Manufacturers Association started, and if any of you on the call have contact information at the end, we'd welcome you to contact us. Situation analysis. You know, we're in almost the end of the first quarter of 2011. Barb touched on a couple of those, the ones that you see on the screen now. The economy, certainly. And each time I find it interesting when I speak, I mention to everyone that, remember, we are consumers. So even as we may be fighting or trying to come up with the newest innovation in a particular brand or a particular market segment, we are a consumer. We're the one that's looking for that new innovation, whether it be the convenience of a particular package or portion pack so that we know exactly how much that we're eating or drinking at a given time. It's really an opportunity where you've got the consumer that's driving the demands. Of course, we want to reduce waste, and we want to be careful about all of the spending that we have. Now, on the retailer side, as many of you are well aware and are probably impacted by, we've got both the retailers and the major brands and boutique brands offering product to the customer now. So the retailer's looking for creating that choice with a premium store brand, and I know that you've seen a number of those out in the marketplace already. And, of course, the retail-ready packaging is really getting a push right now. It helps not only to make sure that the packaging you do have is what you need, but also allows you to make the package presentation for the consumer in a very attractive format. What is it we have? 3 to 7 seconds when a consumer walks into an aisle and is not sure of the purchase they're going to make in order to grab their attention. And within that time, the packaging, as we're about to discuss, has to stand out. Now, these drivers directly impact some business decisions, business decisions related to the sustainability initiatives that your companies may be doing, certainly business decisions regarding labeling and food safety, and then brand differentiation. And we're going to briefly touch on all three of those. Now, before we start, or as we start, one of the most important elements that I think is important is to remember that we ask packaging to do more than just to contain the product. The Global Packaging Project, which is an initiative by the Consumer Forum, started back in 2009 and involves many major retailers in both the U.S. and in Europe, have come up and have formulated a volunteer group that has started this Global Packaging Project. Some of you may be involved. I think it's very worthwhile to just remember what it is you require of packaging. You want to promote your brand, certainly not only the brand itself, but the features and benefits of using that brand. You need to protect it. You need to protect the product itself, the main ingredient, from breakage or from tampering. We certainly want to inform not only the ingredients to make sure that everyone is taking what they think they're getting, but also the use. How is it that this product is best used? We talk about convenience and preparation and portioning. One of my favorite examples is that on the 3-in-1 oil that's been out for years now, the extension, the little flexible extension straw that's at the end of the tube does nothing in order to have that oil work better. Except that with the extension of that little tube, the access that you gain when you're looking at an overhead fan makes the functioning of that package enormously valuable to the home handyman. So it's a great little addition to it. We talk about unitization. How are you going to sell it? And how are you going to transport it? And then certainly a handling from the operation side at the packaging line that you have all the way through to the point of purchase display. The Global Packaging Project has 52 metrics, and there are pilot results that are being reviewed right now. I think, in fact, there's expected to be an announcement in early April as the pilot of some of those pilot results and how they're doing. So let's talk just a bit about sustainability in the primary package, the secondary package, and the transport. We want to talk about material reduction and right-sizing the packaging. Even removing a quarter inch from a flow wrap product, for example, running at 100 parts a minute, is 25 inches of material in a minute. That is a very substantial savings over an 8-hour production run. And so we focus on, and you focus on, everything that you're able to do in order to reduce that package just a little bit. Reduce the web width and the cut that we have when we even put the material together. Lightweighting of glass and plastic and using water-based inks and helping with the sustainability. In the secondary packaging, recycled corrugate. Now, one thing to remember about recycled corrugate is because it has a higher recycle content, the dimensional stability characteristics are not quite the same as what you have when you use all virgin board. As a result of that, the operational performance of the machine itself has to be adjusted so that it can operate with those wider tolerances. That's one of those side effects, if you will, that the good news is that we're using a much higher recycled content. The difficulty is that the machines that are on your packaging lines have to begin to adjust to that. And then, of course, over in the transport packaging, recycling of pallets, cube utilization, a huge element. Down with a member of PMMI today, just talking about the difference in the cube utilization that they are achieving with a customer by going to a flexible format from a bag-in-box format. Very, very substantial and something to consider. One item you can see at the bottom, PMMI does a number of studies. So we had a Trends and Advances in Food Packaging. This came out in the fall of 2010. And one of the questions that we asked was, when you are running a new material, we're going after sustainability, perhaps we're light gauging that material, are you testing that material in your packaging operation before rolling it out? We were surprised that 21% are not looking at new materials at this time. They are staying the same. We think that's fine. It's that element that if you are going to look at a different type of material, it is very important to test that material in the actual packaging operation. And that means to bring it down and coordinate with your packaging team, your packaging operations team, the operators and the technicians, as well as the equipment suppliers, to be sure that you are doing everything that needs to be done to run that material at an optimum element. And, of course, you can see that just over half are now 52% are actually testing sustainable materials on their line with their SKUs. PLA sheet replacing petroleum-based polystyrene, we know the benefits of it, about half the energy and the greenhouse gas emissions. This happens to be an example from one of our recent PAC Expos. Clearlam had an example where they were using for the customer to replace the polystyrene with PLA sheet. How about labeling and food safety? With the push that the Grocery Manufacturers Association has now put on the labeling and food safety, you can see on the right-hand side there an early example of the proposed nutrition labeling, which is just beginning to roll out. I had an opportunity to sit with some GMA members about 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about how this will come out. The icon is going to be pretty similar. There's probably going to be three elements on the left that are going to be mandatory. Hey, here's what's involved, perhaps by calories and fat. And then two or three on the right where the supplier of the package, the CPG company or consumer packaged goods company, can actually put what they consider to be some healthy benefits of the product and put that on the side. Now, of course, that's after FDA has been working for so long with the nutrition labeling guidelines and getting that nutrition label, which is often on the back and carries all of the information, to get it to a point where it's really being used widely. And now here comes a new requirement. You'll see this roll out over the next couple of years, not couple of months, as product updates are being made and as packaging formats are being updated. And where that's put is, of course, up to the packaging team. For example, on a vertical product, some are talking about putting it in a vertical format, almost like a column as opposed to going across the bottom of the label. Now, one thing that we also did with the study that's related there, that food packaging study in the fall, is certainly everyone was aware that GMA was talking about this nutrition labeling and the labeling compliance recommendations for the healthy eats that we'd all like to have for the U.S.-based consumer. We were surprised that 36% of the respondents to the study indicated that they did not plan any new equipment purchases. It may be that they've just made a recent equipment purchase. We thought it was a little high. Certainly with that nutrition labeling guidelines and the addition of the nutrition labeling, the marketers within the CPGs are going to want to make sure that they're still getting the maximum shelf presence on the line. In order to do that, you need to use as much of that label as possible. Perhaps it is that the label will grow a little bit, or you'll consider changing the label format, and that's where we would anticipate some new equipment purchases. The types of new equipment that you might be needed, the date coding, labeling, this is a long list. It depends upon your particular setup. But as you take away from the seminar here and you look at these six or seven different items, it may be good for you to say, let's take a look at how many of these products that we are already using in our packaging operation or how many machines we're already using in our packaging operation and what it is that we may need to do to update them or to modify them based on new requirements. Here's one example. Certainly with the ability of inspection systems right now for both color and high resolution for date and lot coding, which has been in use for a number of years now, the benefits are that, of course, you can not only minimize product recalls, but you can help control the process by looking at those defects. And when you are bringing the information back up into your manufacturing execution system or even into your ERP, it helps with all the tracking and tracing that the FDA in the Food Safety Modernization Act is now requiring, because you're able to collect data on a much more regular basis from the actual product that's going on the packaging line and then to be able to store it. What is still a large amount of data, but to store that. And, of course, any time that you can do an inspection, such as the example shown here, while the bottle is full of the product and it's got the cap on it and the label on it, it hasn't been palletized, it hasn't been warehoused, and it hasn't been shipped. Better that we catch it here than if we get it all the way to the warehouse. Let's take a look a little bit about a couple of brand differentiation products, and then we'll finish up. We still want that the maximize the value as the economy approves. In fact, some of the studies that I've read, some of the stories that are in the trade press right now are indicating that we as consumers are almost beginning to reach a fork in the road. We're still looking for the value in the daily products that we have, even as we want to take some of that money as the economy improves and maybe go out and spend it on a more long-term item. At a conference earlier this week, a gentleman was referencing that some work that he's been looking at, and I don't remember the exact study that he was citing, was just indicating, I'll call it anecdotal information, that the consumers were looking for that value and they were taking the savings that they thought they were generating by looking at a private label as opposed to a branded product and being able to bring that back and saving the money to make it discretionary spending.
Tom, I do have a quick question for you. If you see the growth of private labels, do you see a lot more than emphasis on leveraging some of the digital print technologies?
I do. The ability for especially the private label to come out with a product with the digital labeling technology and then either to turn because they've been able to adjust the message or even to regionalize the message with the digital printing could be a very significant element that is going forward. You're changing SKUs on a regular basis. One gentleman cited some information that he received that because of the price of the ingredients that are going into some of the food products right now, digital labeling may allow you to adjust the amount of product that you're putting in based on some of the costing. I'm not talking about reducing the product, as in lessening the amount of the product, but rather changing some of the ingredients because the costing is going up or down, and yet with digital printing, you can put that new label information out immediately. Very effective use of digital printing.
Great insight. Thanks, Tom.
And then, of course, we've got the building consumer loyalty from the shelf back. We want to get used to the point that you as a consumer, even as we're all in the business, you as a consumer are taking that loyalty and recognizing that you're repeating and returning one time after another because the brand is so strong and well identified. And remember what we said earlier in the packaging is advertising. The package is what's carrying your brand into the home, and that packaging as advertising is a central element of what packaging is intended to do for all of us in the business. Certainly, flexible pouches right now and the stand-up pouch advances that are being made. I again saw one earlier this week that Ampac is putting out, not an advertisement for Ampac, just I was interested to see it, where they have the machine is able to seal the top sealing jaws as you would run in a normal form fill and seal machine, but the zipper is actually below that so that you have a clean score line at the top of the product, and yet you're able to pull off a tab and expose the zipper. That allows you to have still a little bit more product identification or even advertising at the very top of your product above the zipper and yet still have a complete zipper with a very clean line. And remember that even as we're moving toward heavy views of brand differentiation with the flexible pack, the rigid and metal can and glass will remain. Each time that somebody says it looks like we're done with metal in packaging, there's a new opportunity or a new innovation that comes out, the peelable lid that really came into focus there in the early part of 2010 and is continuing to roll out and to allow people or even the shaped can that became a container at the World Cup that SAB Miller did, very effective because now the can becomes the cup and you're using one product to do two things. Pretty innovative use of the metal there. One more example here, InMold labeling technology, really allowing the product to pop. Of course, InMold labeling has been around for multiple decades. What you're able to do now in terms of the graphic quality just continues to improve, and it may be that some of our other speakers will be talking about that here in just a minute. And that brand differentiation, it'll probably be a great lead-in to what we have going next, just to engage and interact with the consumer, especially right there at the product shelf. Tell me a little bit more about this product. Entertain me with this product. Let me know why this product will be fun for me to use or to interact with. Being able to put that information right there on a point of purchase display or to have the digital information on the package and then capture it with your PDA is going to be a very powerful element. And I'm sure we'll talk about that just a little bit more. So the trends to watch, capital spending and plant utilization. Remember that as you get to about 80% plant utilization, that's usually an indicator that it may be time to look at an expansion, or at least that's been the guiding rule. And we are approaching that right now. The name brand and store brand continue to be a fight as we go forward in the years. Healthier lifestyles for all of us, and certainly the foods of the future as we get an aging population. We want the good product. I may be part of that aging population soon. I want that good product. I want it in a single-serve package, and I want it easy for me to use. A couple others, nanotechnology, still been kind of quiet, but working its way into some packaging, especially to keep meats fresh. And then looking at the next generation of machinery, which is what the PMMI members are providing, enhancing the operating efficiency, certainly changeover. One gentleman at the conference earlier this week said he goes through a changeover. Now, he's running a food product. He goes through 15 changeovers per shift, and I thought that was a new high. He's running a pretty big operation. I was surprised to hear it that many times. The increased integration of processing and packaging so that you can streamline your operations and lean out your operations to reduce that waste, but also to make sure that you're capturing all of that information. Because you've leaned it out, you've got one spot of information that you're using to share up and down. We'll hope to see you at PAC Expo at the end of September, 26th to 28th at Las Vegas. And I think, Barb, for me, that's it. We'll have a couple different innovation areas there. But I'll move it over now to you, and we'll continue the program.
Yeah, just one quick question for you. As we sit down, Tom, and from an association perspective, what role do you really see digital playing, and how fast do you see that market from your association perspective actually growing?
We think that the digital market will be growing faster than any of the other markets because of its flexibility. The opportunity to take and to move on a printing operation, to move it even into the packaging operation, which we saw as a pilot project about 2 years ago, some of the digital printing companies had indicated they had some capability to actually do some printing in line on a low to moderate speed packaging operation. That's a pretty big shift change, and that allows the marketing team and the packaging team to really focus in what they might want to do for a message on a brand basis, or to change their message because they found that consumers are responding in one way or another. We think it is an enormous trend that is taking off and is something that needs to be watched and embraced by all of those in the supply chain.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tom. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn over to George Eaton, and what he's going to do is talk to you a little bit about how Frito-Lay has innovatively used packaging from a brand perspective. And regardless of the technology used, I think what you'll see is a very pivotal message about what companies are doing to engage consumers with the overall package. Take it away, George.
Thanks, Barb. Wanted to just very quickly talk about the background as to why packaging plays such a crucial role for us at what we call our first moment of truth, which is in store. As everyone's aware, deep consumer engagement and brand advocacy is getting harder for us and for everyone in the marketing industry. Your average consumer is exposed to 3,000-plus messages every day. So how do you cut through? How do you drive engagement and loyalty is something that we were grappling with at Frito-Lay and trying different ways to address that. So from all the different marketing and brand management we did, we came up with this communication architecture to enable us to better drive engagement at the first moment of truth. That is, when you're on shelf and you have those few seconds to choose a Frito-Lay brand of snack or a competitor's brand. And we found that there are actually three components that really enable us to drive engagement. The first is a strong brand equity. Your consumers need to really know what your brand is and what it stands for. Second, the relevant touch point at the first moment of truth. And by that, I mean packaging, in-store communication. What is that relevant touch point that the shopper or the consumer engages with? And lastly, this new component, which is the relevant technology. I'm sure everyone's aware that more and more when consumers shop, they're using technology to look for more information, to be better engaged with the brand. What I'm going to do now is give you an example of how we bring this communication architecture to life on one of the Frito-Lay brands, which is Doritos. Before I get into what the Doritos business problem to solve is and the consumer problem to solve, just wanted to give you a quick overview of the brand equity of Doritos. So the target consumer for Doritos is anywhere from teenagers to adults 25 to 26 years old. And the brand equity or the brand essence for Doritos is an intense multi-sensorial flavor experience. And we want to deliver that experience through the flavor of the product integrated with a multimedia experience, whether it be music, movies, or some sort of immersive multimedia experience. So the business problem to solve for the Doritos team was to figure out how do we grow the flavored tortilla chip category? How do we grow Doritos share by making it more relevant to the consumer during the late night eating occasion? When you have those hungry moments at, you know, 10, 11, or 12 o'clock at night, you have quite a few different options, not just in terms of the snacks you can have, but also the different meals. You could have a mini meal at that time instead of having Doritos. We really felt like with our target audience, we could get into their mind space and say, hey, when you're hungry at this time, choose a Dorito snack. And the consumer problem to solve was to drive deep and distinctive engagement with the target audience using brand-centric strategies. So for Doritos, the equity is around intense, multisensorial flavor experience. So whatever strategy we adopted had to fit within that brand-centric model. So to the next slide, I wanted to talk about how do we bring this to life. We've got a business problem to solve. We've got a consumer problem to solve. How do we use that new communication architecture, which is built of strong brand equity, relevant touch point at the first moment of truth, and relevant technology to drive share on Doritos? So the equity of Doritos for that specific campaign was around owning the late-night entertainment experience with Doritos. And when you have an equity platform like that, you're elevating it beyond just the functional experience of the product and going into the emotional experience of the product. We also launched a special packaging and a special flavor to really own that late-night entertainment experience, which is called the Doritos Late Night Series, and the one featured there is the tacos at midnight. Thirdly, we knew that our target audience were really into web technologies, leveraging their webcams and their cell phones to really engage with their friends and family. So we said, all right, let's take our equity, let's take our special packaging and this webcam technology to bring out augmented reality to our consumers. And augmented reality is something where you've seen the Avatar movie and some other experiences, is really cool and unique. And for every consumer, the augmented reality gives them a very personal experience. So how does this whole process work? On the next slide, I just wanted to quickly bring that to life. So you would go out and buy the packaging. Now, it's crucial that consumers had to buy this late night package. So when you tie it to a specific sub-brand like the late-night flavor of Doritos, you're automatically driving deep engagement, and you bring something unique to the shopper. They would buy the bag, go to their computer where they have a webcam, and click on DoritosLateNight.com. When you go into that web experience, it tells you, okay, now you've got the right bag, hold up the bag to your webcam to see this intense, immersive experience. So imagine you've got a teenager, it's 12 o'clock at night, they're munching on their late-night tacos. They move the back side of the bag, which has got the augmented reality code, to the webcam, and out pops a concert experience right out of the bag for them. So we partnered up with Blink 182 to launch the special concert that you could only unlock if you bought that special pack of Doritos and opened up the experience through your webcam. And the neat thing about this is when you see the experience on the bag, you can actually move the bag left and right. You can flip it around, and the concert actually flips. So your reality is then augmented with this concert on the bag, and it really drove engagement for us. Consumers and shoppers were just blown away by the experience. And it actually drove share for us. At the end of the day, it hit our business problem to solve. Coming out of this experience, we said, the communication architecture we implemented is really successful. How do we take this beyond Doritos to some of the other 15 or 16 brands we have, like Lay's, Tostitos, and so on? So next year, what we're planning to do is further the boundaries of social media and cell phone scanning technology. The Doritos late night experience clearly told us that we had a strong platform to engage with the shopper or the consumer at the first moment of truth. The next challenge is, how do you drive deep loyalty with consumers? How do you keep the advocacy going? So we're trying a few new technologies with the QR code on pack, barcode scanning, and then leveraging the phenomenal Facebook experience. I'm sure everyone's probably on Facebook. So every technology we bring on pack, we want to make sure it's deeply integrated into a Facebook strategy to drive loyalty. Once you hook the consumer at shelf, you want to keep them engaged in your brand, and Facebook provides us a great platform to do that. So what are some of the key challenges? And at Frito-Lay, we haven't fully cracked the code. We're still learning. We're still evolving. And with these new technologies, we're learning how to better drive engagement at the first moment of truth and then drive loyalty. So one of the first challenges is obviously, how do you update content, keep the brand story fresh, keep it engaging. Once someone is a brand loyal Doritos or Lay's fan, how do you provide relevant content to them, whether it's for the mom or for the teenager? And then the second challenge is what I call driving loyalty beyond the first date. Great, you've got a first date. It went really well. What do you do now? How do you make sure that you have many more dates? And beyond that, how do you establish a long-standing relationship with the consumer? That's where some of the Facebook integration strategies come into play. So, for example, on Lay's, we're looking at our all-natural snacks and how can we provide all-natural recipes for the mom so she can easily make an appetizer in 2 minutes, which is all-natural, and which uses our all-natural snacks. So that's where you can keep driving loyalty and engagement with them beyond the first or second or third purchase. And the last thing is awareness of the new technologies amongst the target consumer and the penetration of that amongst the consumer. So QR code scanning is relatively new. Quite a few people are downloading the app, engaging with it. So as people start adopting it, we can look at fresh content to bring to many more consumers. So when we target our audience and we really understand them, we understand what they do, when they shop, and how comfortable they are with technology, we can go back to our engagement model and say, okay, for this particular consumer or shopper, a cell phone is the right technology. For this particular consumer or shopper, a webcam is the right technology. And the last thing I just wanted to share with everyone was, what are my recommendations moving forward on how do you drive deeper engagement with consumers beyond the first purchase and well into loyalty? Firstly, I think you need to have a deep understanding of your target consumer. You need to understand your brand equity and your target consumer. And you need to connect with them at relevant communication context. Strategies. And what I mean by that is, know where they shop, how they shop, and what they look for when they shop. We know that technology is something they're using more and more. We know that when they shop for certain snacks, they're looking for certain attributes, whether it be flavor, whether it be the wellness credentials. All these are important things that we try to first understand before we launch a multimedia experience like the Doritos late night campaign. Thirdly, make the technology integration seamless when driving deeper engagement at the first moment of truth in shelf. if you make it in such a way that it's hard for the consumer to engage with, then you're going to lose them along the way. So one of the ideas we're thinking of now is how do you elevate the barcode through a cell phone scanning technology to unlock content that's through the QR codes or the barcodes. And you know that consumers generally anyway use their mobile phones or cell phones when they shop. This is a seamless way of integrating technology and brand content. And the last thing is leveraging social media and social networks to continue the dialogue, continue the engagement, and drive loyalty. And Facebook provides a great platform to drive fans to Facebook. They know how to use it, so that's one less barrier in terms of them adopting the technology and driving loyalty through brand content.
Great. Thank you so much, George. George, I do have a question for you from one of our audience members. And, well, I realize that you've got extraordinary long runs on the digital packaging side. How much experimentation has Frito-Lay done on leveraging some of the digital printing technologies?
I think we are starting to experiment with digital printing technologies. For example, Tom was talking about, you know, if you're changing your ingredient labels, quickly putting a digital print on the packaging to raise consumer awareness. That's something we're trying with some of the QR code technologies. We want to try and use digital printing to alert consumers to unlocking content on the back of the bag. So on the front of the pack, putting on some sort of a trial trigger to unlock content, flip the bag, and scan it.
Okay. Terrific. Well, we've got one last speaker, and I think we've heard the perspective of the Association Market on Critical Trends. George, what you see as a brand owner, and what I'm going to do now is turn over to Glenn Marino, and Glenn is really focused on the printing side of it, and he's the VP of Packaging Solutions at Tucker Printers, and he's going to take you through a little different perspective in terms of what's going on in the world of dimensional packaging. And so with that, take it away, Glenn.
Thank you, Barb. We're the ones that are at the tail end of trying to make all these things work for everybody. So that always makes it fun and challenging, I guess. But I'm a RIT grad, Rochester Institute of Technology, and I've been involved in the print and packaging industry for over 25 years. And as I said, now working within Consolidated Graphics on dimensional packaging. Packaging and product markets, one of the things that we're always up against is coming up with and keeping up with technologies and our customers as they change and their things change, their industries change. When I first got started within the industry, we were doing a lot of photo packaging. And that was with, you know, conventional ways to deliver film, your prints and things like that. But as technology started getting introduced into that, film declined, and then you had more in the digital side of that. The packaging had to then switch over to do more of photo mailers. When you do online orders and things got sent to you, photo giftings, things along that line. So as our customers are always changing, we're always looking for ways to keep up with them and to make their packaging stay relevant for what they're doing. So photo was a large industry that we had been in initially, and then we started moving more into the pharmaceutical and nutraceutical industries and the food industries, and you can see some of the photos there. One is a cherry juice 8-pack package, and then a cookie manufacturer, actually, that did you'd put your logo on the cookies. And that we needed to come up with a unique way, and it's kind of hard to see within the picture there, but that's a lenticular piece on the front of that that changes to the cook of the cookies and look of the logo part and where it says logo dough there. And that was something that we came and we automatically applied that packaging on, something that they were looking to try and differentiate themselves from, obviously, their competitors. And then, obviously, moving into dimensional mailers, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, is we have a flex mailer that we'll talk about a little bit more. And moving into the digital packaging opportunities, digital packaging has a lot of advantage over traditional printing. Obviously, for the biggest thing is being the variable print. We can put into there different graphics on each individual piece, and we can run it that way. So a lot of short-run private label solutions, this is ideal for startup companies and things like that. It's a great way to personalize your packages. One of the areas that we're seeing a lot of this into is unique promotions or targeted mailings, and that can be targeted by product or by regions, but it is a great way to get a sampling done on a certain audience before maybe rolling out the final manufacturing run of that. So you can go, you can put actual pieces out there, get some response rates onto that, and see, hey, we got four different ideas. Which one gives us a better solution, and run that a little bit more then. So it's a great thing. And then also as packaging solution demos is, like with George's, they were trying different things. It's a great way to pitch a thing and come up with a custom 5-10 pieces to hand out within meetings of, here's what this is going to look like. Here's the graphics that you can put on it. Having the real piece that you can touch and feel is definitely a much better presentation to be able to use. So probably the biggest thing with a digital packaging, though, is you can differentiate yourself from your competitors because you're going with the personalization, the capabilities that digital presses can offer. You can make these things unique and differentiate yourself from your competitor. Next slide here. Dimensional mail is one of the fastest growing direct mail market segments that we're experiencing right now. It's definitely an engaging piece that you're getting much more market potential versus what I'll just call conventional direct mail, a 9x12 envelope, you know, that you get versus a dimensionalized mail piece. So while the overall cost of the production for doing a dimensionalized mail piece might be higher, the response rates are significantly higher when using a dimensional mail compared to traditional mail. The Direct Marketing Association reports that the higher range of response rates with dimensional mail is 8 to 14%, and then some targeted mailings generate more than 30% response rate. So those are significant numbers that you can't really ignore in regards to how you're making your presentation to your customer. The Presort.com reports that 85% of executives are more likely to open up a direct mail piece, dimensional mail piece, that is large and odd size and does not come from the post office. And if you know, look at yourself at home or whether you're at work, if you get your mail and you got all the letters and things, you're more apt just to pitch those out without even opening them. Or if you get something that's dimensionalized, you're going to at least open it up to want to see what it is. So you've already taken your customer one step farther in realizing, okay, what is it that you have there?
Glenn, I have a quick question for you, Glenn. You obviously have traditional offset technology, and mm-hmm. you're using digital technology for some of the dimensional mailers that you've got put together. Is there a crossover point, or is it really very application-dependent in terms of what the end customer wants from a personalization perspective?
I mean, it's a case-by-case answer, unfortunately. Within the crossover point, you know, digital versus offset, you know, depending on what the piece is, you could probably maybe 5,000 pieces and under may go digital, 5,000 and over may push more from a cost standpoint to go offset. But even within the offset side of it, within Consolidated, a web offset, we can do variable print as well. Inline as we print that way. We can do variable print as we convert the package as well. So it all depends on to what degree it is that you're looking to do variations, and each piece we've got to really look at it at a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Thanks, Glenn.
Sure. The next slide here, the flex mailer. One of the unique things that we get involved in is we often have people come to us and they have a problem. And they're looking for us to come up with some creative solutions to help get around some of the problems. This particular flex mailer, we have a patent pending on it right now for Consolidated Graphics, but there was a premium company that was getting stuff produced in China, but with the postal codes that are ever-changing, the way that they were mailing it pushed it from an automated flat up to a parcel. Now, that's a significant change if you're not too familiar with the postal side of it. That could be about an additional $1.70 each piece in postage cost. So that's pretty significant, and that they were going to get all theirs moved up onto that. So what they had was they had a rigid piece. So we came up with, after much testing and going back and forth with the post office, we do have national approval with the USPS on this, but we created this flex mailer. And if you look at the sketch drawing, there is your piece that you're mailing out that's rigid goes into one of the corners. It gets inserted into the outer mailer, but this allows, it solves two of the problems that the post office has. Is one, it needs to be able to be flexible in both the X and Y directions so it can move through their equipment up to a 90-degree turn, but it also has to be able to retain a consistent thickness all the way across the piece and can't vary by more than a quarter of an inch. So the solution that we came up with was this flex mailer. And why this was significant for them and for others, in fact, here's the result part of it, is the it was classified as an auto-machinable flat. For this customer, they had the first three orders for roughly 1.5 million pieces. We saved them roughly 96 cents per piece in postage. So they saved approximately $1.5 million on that, and this was just the first three orders that we did with them. So while our overall package may be more than what they were using, the postal savings was significant and far outweighed any cost increase for the packaging. And then in addition, some of the things that they realized and enjoyed was then that dimensional presentation. They were seeing that they had a higher response rate as far as people opening them and responding to what they had in there, reading it, and then engaging them for other products that they also provided. So they were able to also then provide this dimensional mail piece and all the advantages of that. They were able to brand this piece completely, where I think some of the other things they were doing, they were only able to put a label onto it, was their only branding. So the solution saved them postage, gave them a better market presence, and definitely a much more bigger marketing area to work with as far as that part of it goes. Some of the challenges and recommendations, though, that I would offer with this is if you're interested in doing digital, you really need to start in the beginning of it and design for digital. There's a lot of restrictions that might be on the digital as far as size of the piece, format and how it's going to get run, stock that things can run on, all come into play as far as digital versus your traditional offset. So you just can't assume that you're just going, oh, all right, I'm just going to make this go digital. Talk to your people up front in regards to what it is that you're looking to do. And if you don't have experience within the packaging side of it, partner with somebody who understands the fundamentals of packaging design because they can help you along and direct you in which way makes more sense, both from a cost standpoint but from a functionality standpoint, to be able to get you your end result that you're after. Post office changes are always going to be out there, and they're going to continually be there. It's something that you always just need to keep an eye on so you know what changes are coming up. As I say, in this case with our flex mailer, the change was coming up, so they were able to avoid a lot of the postal increases. We were able to get that right before the rates increased, A lot of things like that can be averted up front if you know that the problem's there and you can plan accordingly with that. And then, of course, with digital technologies, it helps differentiate customers' products from their competitors. So by personalizing, versioning, and targeting short runs, you can definitely stand out, you know, as George did with the Doritos thing, something that was different than other people aren't using. The digital technologies allow you to do that, and QR codes and things like that are all things that we're able to do. A lot of flexibility and different design concepts that can get come up, that can get created by just working with your packaging people on that.
I have a couple quick questions for you, Glenn.
Sure.
One of the you're doing obviously the flexible dimensional mailers.
Mm-hmm.
What is CGX looking at relative to things like flexible film packaging, and where do you see the future of that for your organization?
Unfortunately, flexible film packaging, CGX does not get involved with it at this point. We do everything from digital, obviously sheet-fed offset, web, point of purchase, you know, packaging, all that. The film side of it is not something that Consolidated Graphics gets into at this point.
Okay, great. Thanks. Well, I'm going to wrap up with just a couple quick comments. And the objective today, obviously, was to share with you, I think, some critical trends, both from the perspective of a brand owner, a printer, and the association side of the market. I think what you've got to look at is that as you think about packaging, packaging innovation really links to new opportunities. It says I can do different types of packaging design. I can blend in different information. I can integrate. I can make the package into an interactive tool. It opens up a different material set, manufacturing, and workflow. And what we're starting to see, and I think it's kind of interesting, is what we categorize as convergence. There were traditional label and packaging converters. We're seeing digital printers, like Tucker, by the way, start engaging in the packaging market. And we're actually seeing, in some instances, packaging go online. And it's kind of the concept of web to package. And so if you think about your business, what I would tell you, and I'll check one more time for questions, but what I would tell everybody is you really do need to embrace technology. It's not going to go away. You need to look at your work processes and understand what your customer requirements are, much like Glenn did as he built out those dimensional mailers to save his customer millions of dollars in postage. You have to engage those customers. You need to look at invest in sales and marketing. And I think George did a great job of summing up. You really do need to prepare for an interactive world. And those are all critical concepts as you take a look at where the market is headed. So I wanted to just kind of sum up with one final slide, and I think the concepts that we're looking at are packaging is a growth market. It's not going away. And quite honestly, Disney summed it up when he says the best way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. Thanks to everybody, and have a great rest of the day.